opening line in Dune Part 2 states that power over spice is power over all. And with that, the descent into tyranny begins. It is made known that acquiring power has always been the end goal, that control of the most valuable commodity will lead to subjugation of the many. The spice is no longer appreciated for its beauty, its sense of aliveness, its intangible qualities. Instead, it is favored for what it will give the possessor, the end results, the ultimate gains. The intrinsic value has been lost, while the extrinsic overshadows all. And what is most objectively valuable is power, domination, and control. We return to Paul speaking with his unborn sister, and he suggests that she return to the unknown void, as the world she is coming into is cruel and harsh. It's a cruelty that he is becoming a part of. He is not separate from the world he abhors. He feigns to be a gentle person, never stopping to consider the darkness within, always believing it lies without. There is a constant ignorance of his seeds of tyranny, the need for power and domination, which slowly grows in the shadows. Paul is seen engaging in combat with the Sardaukar, the army who is said to be cruel and ruthless. Paul and the Fremen's tactics are not so humane themselves, though, taking no mercy and smashing the opponent's heads with rocks. The Fremen capture the dead bodies and treat the carcasses as if they are unreal, like garbage. Are the desert people and Paul entitled to enact cruel tactics strictly because the opponent is also cruel? Maybe they are no better than the Harkonnens, as they stack piles of the dead and drain their body fluids. Jessica feels ill to her stomach, and we could chalk it up to morning sickness, or we could equally say it's due to the inhumanity of it all. The Harkonnens refer to the Fremen as rats, as animals who are lower and different from themselves. The similarities with the Fremen can be noticed here again, as the desert warriors also treat outsiders as others. They refer to their visitors of Paul and Jessica as potential spies, always believing that unknown people will threaten their ways, possessing a secret agenda. Both groups see outsiders as snakes, as potential threats to their own group integrity. For each, the other is shunned and unwelcome, disposed of unless they serve the group's purpose of domination and power. And though Paul initially feels the brunt of this opposition from the Fremen when he arrives in their cave, the tone shifts when word of the prophet makes its way into the room.
Some of them already think I'm their Messiah. Others, false prophet. I must sway the non-believers.
The plot towards the top of the power hierarchy continues. He believes his reasons for becoming the Messiah are based in revenge, but the more likely motive is his focus towards ruling the universe. Paul realizes that the masses must follow him, that no one can question him, including himself. All decisions must be certain and final, and gaining followers aligns with the visions of him as emperor and the ensuing holy war. As he erases doubts of other possible futures, the Fremen will also commit to their new king. Jessica meets with Stilgar and views the holy pools of water, a sacred place which cannot be disturbed. He speaks about the paradise which is to come at some later date, one which can only be brought by external circumstances, never by oneself. The Fremen cannot get past their sacred acts and customs, the stories they hold so dear. Unfortunately, these are the very symbols which restrict them from making choices to change their own world. A paradox has been created in which the things that they hold so sacred are the things which make them dependent upon an external bearer of salvation. Whilst the true way towards paradise can only come from within and through removal of the sacred acts which restrict their free choices. Instead of utilizing the sacred water to begin creating a green paradise, they wait for a savior to do it for them. They have boxed themselves into a cage in which they wait for the Messiah to save them from themselves.
You want to control people? You tell them a Messiah will come. then they'll wait for centuries.
Paul is still intent to deny his inheritance as a savior, and that he is not meant to lead, but rather to fight alongside the people. The prophecy proves too strong, though, and the zealots claim this is all part of the plan, how the true prophet will deny his claim because he is too humble. The trap of the prophecy continues to weave its way forward. Paul can do no wrong. He is seen as faultless, where all signs point towards yes. Meanwhile, Jessica contributes to this process in the Bene Gesserit way by targeting the most fearful and vulnerable individuals which need converting. The Harkonnen darkness can be seen within his mother as she desires to control and manipulate others so as to move along her own plans. Despite Paul's seemingly humble ways, it appears more likely that he is becoming a great politician. After their battle victory, he uses all the right phrases and words to convince the Fremen that he is worthy, as he speaks their own language and tries to become like them, acting like the mouse, or better yet, the rat which he names himself after. He is sneaking into their community in order to take what he desires. The shifty politician understands that he must be accepted as a commoner before he can become their leader. He claims he will die for their cause, but it's not actually their cause. It is his own terrible purpose which he aims at, becoming the man that his visions and dreams indicate, a life he cannot seem to avoid. His destiny will become the destiny of the Fremen. His secret purpose will become their purpose, and the army he creates will help accomplish his goals of dictatorship.
Millions and millions of people starving to death because of me.
Visions of a future of terrible purpose are worsening as the envisioned suffering and pain continue to escalate. Following his latest dream, Chani asks if Paul wants to delay the final test of riding the sandworm, providing a chance to change the course and move another direction. She still believes there are options in life, while Paul is becoming more and more certain that this future has already been determined. The final test may move the world closer to a jihad, but Paul shrugs it off and decides to ride the worm with no hesitation. The test is passed, and the gravity of the event is felt. The people bow down in praise, and word quickly spreads about Mahdib's power and abilities. The people are ready, after being prepared for so long, to follow blindly behind the off-world prophet. They have been conditioned to accept him as savior, as a one that can lead them anywhere without question. Final barriers to his tyranny are nearly eroded. This was the final test to establish the loyal following. All that must change is Paul's complete transformation, his commitment to his role, and to the visions that have no possibility of changing again.
Do you not think I also feel the weight of the prophecy?
It's not a prophecy. It's a story that you keep telling, but it's not their story, it's yours.
Conversations between Irulan, the Emperor, and the Reverend Mother reveal more about the nature of the higher-ups, the way that power and control are the ultimate aspects of life for many in the known universe. It is agreed upon that hope is not needed when one has the means to fully plot and plan their course of action. It's the mindset of the ruling class, a world in which surprises are never welcome, where everything should reside within a predictable order. These are their means towards safety, security, and immunity from danger. They seek the ability to stay in one place, never needing to adjust or change. The ruler need not worry about changing themselves, as long as they are able to arrange people and the world to their benefit. And this is the life that Paul is headed towards. One in which he will be insulated by his fervent followers and their loyal devotion to his every word. And it will be a type of rule which is much stronger than what the emperor or baron possesses. Their control is based around fear and punishment, but these levers will never be enough, as someone will always rise above the fear and overcome the tyrant. The absolute power of the religious tyrant will be attained by the way of faith and loyalty. The chances of dissuading the faithful servant is slim, as their love for their leader will overcome any explanation of logic. The willful slave is much more dangerous than the oppressed one. The oppressed is always looking for a way out, while the willful sees no reason to find escape from a tortured existence. When Gurney is reunited with Paul, they reflect on old times, as well as the current state of affairs. Halleck is amazed that the young pup is Mahdib, but he is also unsure, and he states,
Paul Mahdib. You've heard many stories about Mahdib. None of them pretty. You see the fear.
He sees the vicious nature of his old friend, a man who is feared just as much as the evil Harkonnens. Paul believes fear is needed at this point, justifying his tactics, although they continue to be denounced when arising across enemy lines. Fear and brutality are permissible to ourselves, but are evil when employed by our opposition. He is blind to his own shadow and the impact of his actions, continuing to be focused on end results of power and control. The visions of holy war intensify as all other scenarios recede into the background. The future is narrow and extremely tight. There is seemingly only one way ahead. But Paul requires guidance and asks to speak with Jameis. This man is dead, though, so this is no longer a future vision, but a hallucination of the mind, making Paul see what he wants himself to see. The vision, including Jameis, direct him towards drinking the water of life as a way to gain the highest vision. It is one which is unobstructed, meaning that the future is no longer open to interpretation. It is instead direct and to the point, like a command or order, which leaves little room to debate the next decision. He proceeds to drink the water of life, killing himself and bringing him back to life as the one who connects space and time. Paul has died to his old life, but what does this mean exactly? That he is no longer the Paul we have come to know. The old Paul is the one who questions, the one who considers what he is and what the world could be, the one who contemplates the very nature and mystery of existence. These are child's games for the new Paul, as now,
visions are clear now. I see possible futures all at once.
The Paul who has been reborn has been born into the life of spice addiction, a place in which power and control over resources and the objective world are at the forefront of consciousness, a place where the mystery is gone and domination reigns supreme. There is no longer a general direction, only a final destination that is telelogic in nature, no longer operating as an open system. There is only one point that can be met, and Paul is the one which will guarantee that point is found. But the reborn prophet also comes to know himself as a Harkonnen, that his true nature derives from the brutal group he has come to hate. These evil enemies have always been a part of Paul, and it's as if this knowledge of his family lineage allows him to more fully accept the path of destruction he is about to release upon the world. His fate is being met unconditionally, to become an evil tyrant like the Baron, one who is meant to dominate the mass. The crowd now fears him as he moves through the swarm of people and they part from his direction. Nothing can stand in his way now, and all must make room. He arrives at the religious epicenter, insulting the leaders of the ceremony and proclaiming,
"It is the only way.
I'm pointing the way!"
A challenge is made to all in attendance to obey. The populace needs to fear him, while simultaneously loving him. He is the archetypal tyrant father, the one which children adore and despise at the same time. Paul promises them a paradise of green pasture, something which can be attained only if they follow his instructions. He is now fully on board with the Bene Gesserit plans, which have been implanted in his psyche generations prior. The thing that the Fremen followers and even Mahdib himself will fail to grasp as they barrel towards destruction is that a true prophet is not one who sees concrete events in the future, the one who claims knowledge of the future is actually a false prophet, as the future is always untold and unwritten. A true prophet, however, is one who instead sees the patterns of the universe, one who is able to observe that which underlies the visible world, and to point out and notice what takes place behind the scenes, to see events before they take place, but only because the patterns and themes are repeating themselves, making them predictable based off history. It is the real meaning of connecting the past and the future, of being all places at once, what Paul was truly sent to do. Previous events are forever playing themselves out in similar forms and fashions. The Savior is meant to point out these cyclic patterns so that crises can be avoided. The one who really connects time is able to look into the past and use information of former mistakes so as to make a new choice when the time presents itself in the future. The false prophet, like Paul, is one who does not learn from the past of himself or his ancestors, and instead becomes a victim of fate, destined to be trapped in the patterns which could have been detected by a keener eye. There are patterns that Paul was unable to notice, and so he assumed a primary role in the entire drama. The old Baron is killed, prototypically serving as the fall guy for the mistakes of the current tyrant emperor. Meanwhile, a new power is rising in unsuspected lands, coming to claim the throne as the current power remains ignorant to the force behind the coming onslaught. Paul avenges his father and his house by killing the Baron and living up to his true Harkonnen name, by overthrowing the emperor and usurping the throne for himself. He has become the new voice of authority, the one who commands others and takes no questioning. All conversation has come to an end on this one-way street. Gurney asks,
"Why does he take such risks?"
And Stilgar's response sums up the coming tyranny by saying,
"Muad'Dib leads the way."
Questions are no longer permitted, not by the new king or any of his followers. All matters are settled and final. The pattern that continues to play itself out through history is enacting itself again, where a new power rises to dominance and the old system falls due to increasing weakness. But the pattern also indicates that this power, that of Paul and the Fremen, will fall themselves in due time, and that their absolute rule is something that can never hold firm. It is a pattern a true prophet would have seen, by paying attention to the historical round of cycles, as opposed to seeking out confirmation of biased visions and dreams. Instead, Muad'Dib becomes the new god tyrant, repeating an oft-recurring theme which could have been avoided if he only continued to question his destiny.